Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
A little bit late for the NFL podcast, but we get it posted here Thursday afternoon, early evening. Welcome in. I'm Doug Kazarian, Behind the Bets here. Obviously, Wednesday's college football. Go check that out. A lot of good stuff from Phil Steele, John Murray, and Brad Edwards, breaking down Bama LSU. As for the upcoming podcast here in the NFL, Murray and some interesting plays for the Bonanza. Things are heating up. I'm creating some separation. Got bailed out by a pick six on Monday night. We'll also try to make sense of all the Todd Gurley stuff, and clearly the right football move. It impacts bettors. It impacts fantasy. We'll discuss that. And big news in the world of John Murray, Hugh Jackson fired by the Cleveland Browns, and OC Todd Haley as well. So we'll get into all that. Also look ahead to this weekend's lines as well. Straight ahead here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
A mutual friend of ours heard the open for the first time and texted us both couple days ago and really, really enjoyed it. I like hearing that because we've kind of dismissed it. It's no longer fresh.
Yeah, but weren't you a little disappointed that mutual friend hadn't been listening all along? I mean, that was really my takeaway from it, DK.
I hear you, and I initially thought that when I realized who we were talking about. The man is very focused.
Right.
Stays his lane.
Right.
He's a very 2 inches wide, 3 miles deep kind of guy. So he can fixate on things, and that's what he does. He's a professional bettor. And
he is.
I don't know how much wisdom he can glean from us on the podcast, all things considered, and how he approaches his handicapping.
No, he and I talk college football a lot. We don't talk too much NFL, to be honest with you. He can't learn any NFL from me anyway. But we go back and forth a lot about college football during the week.
That's true. He's in contest, so maybe he should listen to this valuable podcast for the NFL. We have a lot to dive into here. We'll get into the bonanza. Got a little hairy for me. There was a serious sweat going on in the fourth quarter there. Really,
yeah,
the entire
that was,
game, but it's okay.
Good for you, but
yeah.
Very unfortunate for the books in Nevada. I still can't believe that happened. That was a tough one. That was a big swing here at the Superbook. I would imagine it was a big swing statewide. That was makes this week's meetings a little bit more difficult, but
really?
It's okay.
Really?
That was a tough. No, that was a huge swing. I mean, everybody had the Patriots, and there were so many favorites covered on Sunday, and then they all tied to the Patriots on Monday night. The Patriots had no business covering that game, but it's okay.
I disagree a little bit. They only gave up 6 points, and the Bills' defense stiffened. But come on, you got that many field goals on short field goals in the first half. You're not supposed to get in once. I mean, I see what you're saying. But it's not
14
like
was a lot.
Bills weren't starting an NFL quarterback. I mean, if it was Josh Allen, I would have taken the Bills. But they weren't starting an NFL quarterback. And
no. The
guy was playing golf a couple weeks before, and he barely practiced the previous week. And they were running like Wildcat early on because they had no options. Now, with that being said, you don't expect fumbled snaps. You don't expect some incompetent play. But I would have hoped that the Patriots could punch it in earlier in the first half. So I agree with you at the end. They shouldn't have covered. But if you take a step away in the course of the whole game and everything that transpired, they should have.
I guess, but it sure didn't feel like that on Sunday night. You know, the Bills said that I forget the name of the linebacker. One of the Bills linebackers almost intercepted a pass around midfield.
Mm-hmm.
They could have really swung that game. Buffalo might have even won the game if that kid hadn't dropped that interception. They certainly would have covered. And then I think the Patriots converted the third down on the next play. They ended up scoring the first offensive touchdown of the game. Then Buffalo had what for a moment looked like a touchdown, but then on review, it was clearly dropped. And then I believe the very next play was the pick six. And that was one of those pick sixes, too, where the second he intercepted it, you knew he was gone. Like, he jumped in front of the ball and was like, oh, that's not good.
Well, he wasn't the only one jumping. I might have also leaped out of my chair.
I was at a local watering hole, and everybody was very happy except for the bookmakers in the room. We were not too pleased with that play, but it's okay. It's NFL, man. That's how the NFL goes. The public does very well in the NFL. The public was all over Green Bay. I'll tell you that much.
Well, let's talk about that. That's the most memorable moment, gambling moment of the season, right? The Todd Gurley falling down instead of scoring a touchdown that would have changed essentially every bet on the board, given all the teasers, the over-unders, and the side bets as well, unless the 9.5s came into play and who knows what would have happened.
In the second half. The second half, I believe, was Rams minus 6.5, and a lot of people were on that. And that the final score of the second half, I want to say, was 21-17. I know Green Bay covered.
Right, it was a 10-8 game at half, so it would have made the game line Rams minus 4.5.
Yeah, so that was a really big play for sure. And then certainly the total, which you just mentioned, that would have put it over the total. So a lot of money would have changed hands on that play, obviously. But the right team covered. I mean, Green Bay was the right side in that game, and they certainly deserved to cover, and they could have won the game. It was a very good performance by the Packers on Sunday.
And who knows, if Ty Montgomery stays in the end zone like he was instructed, maybe the Packers do win the game. And I heard a lot of people talk about the bad beat of the Rams. I don't think it was a bad beat at all. The Rams were never the right side until maybe if Gurley scores that touchdown. I mean, they did lead by 10, I believe, at some point, right? They went up 10.
They went up 23-13, but then I believe Green Bay just responded right away with a touchdown. So you got to give credit to Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. Green Bay was the right side in that game. To act like you had a bad beat with the Rams, I cannot agree with you on that. Now, if you acted like you had a bad beat on Bills plus 14, I'll certainly have a little bit of sympathy for you after Monday night.
So the fact that there is a group of people out there that thinks Gurley did the wrong thing is laughable. I'm sorry. There's people who I really respect.
That's just ridiculous.
Who claim that the smarter thing would have been to punch it in. And I just...
Well, did you...
People don't understand math of it.
Did you see the Arizona State-USC game on Saturday? I had a play on Arizona State. It was, similar scenario. Arizona State had the ball and the lead. They had a fourth down where they went for it. The quarterback could have gone down at the one-yard line, and then they could have knelt out the clock. He ran it into the end zone for the touchdown. USC got the ball back, immediately scored a touchdown, and then USC had an onside kick. Now, they didn't recover the onside kick. Arizona State did, and that ended the game, so nobody will ever remember it. But if that Arizona State quarterback had just gone down at the one-yard line, they could have just knelt the game out. And instead, they were subject to, or they had to deal with an onside kick that theoretically could have lost them the game. So, you know, if there's anything you can do to end the game, you should do it. That Arizona State quarterback should have gone down at the one. He didn't. Todd Gurley should have gone down where he did, and he did.
Well, and on top of that, they ran the play with 1:05 to go. So if you score, there's like 54 seconds to go. Okay?
Yeah.
But by just being tackled, forget taking the knee, just by being tackled, the next snap's not till like 20 seconds. So just staying in bounds, let's say he only went 4 yards and brought up 4th and 6. Just staying in bounds made it useful just to kill the clock.
For sure. Yeah, it's much better than scoring the touchdown and leaving Aaron Rodgers almost 1 minute. What if they missed the extra point? Then it's an 8-point game.
That's exactly. And they would have played into the other discussions we've had when teams are down one, you let the other team score. So,
right. Of course. The at that point in the game, Green Bay's only chance was to have Todd Gurley score the touchdown.
Yeah, even go down 9.
Very, very slim chance, but it was their only chance. It was certainly a better chance than they have when Jared Goff is in the victory formation.
Right, so it's kind of laughable. And then there's that other group of people that claiming fix or whatever, that league want whatever nonsense that's just
that's
purely
just
emotional. And that's a concern because here's the thing. To me, my biggest takeaway, obviously this was a huge game. You told me on Sunday it was the second most biggest handle of all the games that week in the NFL. So there's a lot of eyeballs. It's the premier game. You have an undefeated team against Aaron Rodgers, drama at the end. I mean, it's obvious how big of a platform this was. But then you have a player commenting on a point spread in the locker room afterward when asked, and then tweeting about it jokingly. And I just, it kind of like warms my heart that gambling has arrived, right? Like, it's no longer hushed tones and whispers that you can mention it in the same breath as fantasy. And Todd Gurley just treated it like a normal thing. I don't care about fantasy or Vegas. I was just trying to do what's best for the team. And he laughed about it on Twitter. Sorry, Vegas, or whatever. And I think it was totally playful. And I think it was a step in the right direction for gambling in that it's treated normally, right? Like, it's just viewed as a normal thing.
Gambling has definitely arrived, and some of these NFL games, some of these primetime games, man, I don't know how you could sit through them unless you had a little bit of an investment on the game, whether it be through a bet or through fantasy football or a survivor pool that you're in, whatever the case may be. And certainly gambling has arrived. Everybody knows the point spread now. How could you not? It's across the bottom line on all these channels. Everybody knows exactly what the point spread is, and everybody knows that if Todd Gurley had scored that touchdown, most Rams bettors would have won their bets. But the bottom line is that he did the right thing, and this whole theory that the game was fixed by Todd Gurley is absolutely laughable. If Todd Gurley was in on it, he would have fumbled in the first quarter or something. I mean, the plan was, okay, if you have a chance to score a touchdown to cover the spread to go down with 30 seconds left in the game or 50 seconds left in the game, I mean, that's some plan. I mean, if he was fixing the game, wouldn't he have fumbled or done something major earlier in the game?
Yeah, the fact that it influenced his play at all is stupid. McVay called a timeout right before that play.
Yep, and right? I'm sure he told him to go down.
And Peter King's column described how three guys in the huddle were reminding everyone to fall down. They call it Rolex, like the connection with time, right? Time on the clock.
Yeah.
And it's something they practice and discuss, that they are a smart team. And the fact that anyone is suggesting otherwise is just being emotional. Tell someone who says that, if they didn't have any money on the game, would they really think that? And that's the thing. And look, we see it in fantasy. You see it on tweets, like some guys yell at the fantasy guys, you cost me my league. Well, that's noise. That's going to happen. Those are, you know, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet kind of thing. But the macro for me was that players and tweeted about it, and it was post-game comments, and it's a story because it should be, because it had a huge impact, millions and millions and millions of dollars globally, right? Offshore, Vegas, New Jersey, whatnot. But I think just the fact that it wasn't scoffed at and looked the other way, that we actually treated it like newsy content, I think is my sort of takeaway, is that now gambling has officially arrived.
Gambling has arrived, and it is heartwarming. That was a good choice of words. And it's good to see everybody finally talking about this in the open. I know guys like me and you have been talking about it since we were, let's say, younger. But it's good that everybody's talking about it now that it's in the open, man.
All right, so there's that big story. And then there's another one that I'm sure is heartwarming for you. Hugh Jackson, no longer the head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Heartwarming for me. I mean, I know Kai wants to hear my take on this, and Kai, I'm heartbroken. I mean, Hugh Jackson was the best thing about the NFL in my mind. I mean, it was between him and Nathan Peterman.
Oh, yeah.
The NFL is not going to be as much fun for me on Sundays, man. I mean, I loved watching Hugh just like completely make the wrong decision in every late game scenario. And yeah, I mean, you tell me you're not going to miss a guy that tried to go for two after a touchdown in overtime that ended the game?
No, he was pointing to 2 seconds left on the clock.
Oh, 2 seconds left on the clock. Whatever.
Even though they had won the game.
You're not going to miss a guy that scored a touchdown in overtime and didn't even know the game was over? I mean, come on. I'm going to miss the Hugh Jackson era. I'm going to miss all the crazy things it said in defense of Hugh Jackson. You know, Doug, we had a mutual friend that was on Twitter on Monday blaming Hugh Jackson's firing on Baker Mayfield. I thought that was one of the freezing cold takes of the year in sports. Just insane. I mean, what was the Browns' record last year? 0-16 while Baker Mayfield was in college. But, yeah, it's Baker's fault that Hugh Jackson got fired. That makes sense.
Yeah, Skip Bayless, step aside. You have company there. I defended Hugh Jackson early in the season, and I said, not that he's a great coach, I just said the verdict is still out, in my opinion, because the roster was put together so poorly, you couldn't formulate an opinion, and you can't just use the record. I've always said quarterback records are stupid, the win-loss record.
I agree with that.
And I think coaching obviously has a much bigger impact than a QB on the record, so to speak, obviously the offense. But you know what I mean, like he controls the defense and things like that. But if you have a horrible roster like the Browns had given them and drafted so poorly, there's only so much a head coach can do. Now, it's not binary either. It's not just wins and losses. It's how you play and turnovers and whatnot. But I just felt after the sample size this year and with a much better roster, I came to the conclusion personally that Hugh Jackson was probably not a good football coach.
No, and it's time for the Cleveland Browns organization to move on. And I think this job, it's not going to be Greg Williams. He's not going to be the full-time head coach. But I do think the Browns' job this offseason is going to be maybe the most attractive job on the market. With all the talent they have, I think Baker Mayfield has the ability to develop into a franchise quarterback. We've talked about how much I like Myles Garrett. Denzel Ward is a stud player, the corner out of Ohio State. I like Nick Chubb. I like Jarvis Landry. I mean, the Browns' offensive line is a mess. You know, no matter who the quarterback is, that they need to make some changes on that O-line. But they got a ton of talent, and they got a bunch more draft picks coming next year, too. I think the Browns' job will be sought after.
I filled in on Golic and Wingo last year around New Year's, and Adam Schefter basically made headlines saying, talking about the front office, he said the Cleveland job is maybe the head coach situation. The Cleveland job is a better gig right now than the New York Giants. And everyone went crazy. It's like, well, look at the Giants. Oh, no, he said he'd rather be the Browns organization than the Giants organization moving forward because the Giants, look, they had the defending Super Bowl champs in their
it's not even close.
So at the time, it was the one seed, excuse me. So the Eagles were in their division and a lot of competitive teams and Eli Manning and uncertainty at quarterback and all those question marks. And here are the Browns with all this upside, all the draft picks, including the number one pick at the time, which ended up becoming Baker Mayfield. So a lot of allure there.
Not even close. Adam Schefter is right about that. I don't know how anybody could even argue that. That's great. Don't forget about this too. The expectations. I mean, what's considered a success in Cleveland? If you made it to a wild card game, they'd carry you off the field on their shoulders. Whereas the New York Giants, four-time Super Bowl champions, there's a lot of expectations in New York. Cleveland, there's nothing. You do anything there, you're a god.
So that's another big story that hits home to you, close to home. And there's another storyline this week that really is right in your wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And you got Nathan Peterman starting for the Bills this week.
Yeah, Nathan J. Peterman.
Excuse me.
Starting a quarterback for the Bills. The Chicago Bears a 10-point road favorite with Mitch Trubisky. That tells you a lot about Jay Peterman. That'll be the game that I'm going to watch on Sunday morning because I can't watch Hugh Jackson anymore. So I'm going to keep an eye on Jay Peterman. That should be a lot of fun, I think. I think the Bills should maybe just pull a fan out of the stands and see what he can do.
Wasn't there that game with the Blackhawks where like their first two goalies were hurt and they had to pick a guy who was like their emergency? That was like accountant, I want to say.
I think he just like finished up the game. I think the Blackhawks won that game.
Yeah. No, it was it's actually a thing in the NHL. It's the emergency goalie for either team. And I always said, speaking of fixes, like what if that guy's a huge Blackhawks fan and he has to play for the other team? Isn't he gonna like Olay Matador some goals there?
Probably. Yeah, I mean there's gotta be some guy that's like about my age that plays like semi pro football in the upstate New York area that could just be in the stands on Sunday. And they just point to him like, you're in. Put him in there.
Hey, Melon, get your suit on. We need you. Melon.
There's got to be somebody.
We need you.
How could he be worse? Or they could go to Terrell. I know they signed Terrell Pryor this week to play receiver, right? But could he really be worse than Peterman? I mean, Peterman is ridiculous.
Bovada has a prop bet right now. Odd Shark tweeting this out and bringing it to my attention. Over-under of interceptions thrown by Nathan Peterman against the Bears. What would you make it, Mr. Oddsmaker, Mr. Director?
I'd probably, you know what? I think I'd make it 1.5, and I'd probably favor the over by a little bit. Although Peterman's never thrown an interception in Buffalo. Picked up that stat on Tuesday. All of his picks have been on the road.
Has he ever played in Buffalo?
I don't know. I'm sure he has. No, he played what was that game? I think it was against the Colts. The game was in the snow last year. Didn't he play in that game, or was that Tyrod Taylor back in?
That was Taylor, man.
Oh, that was Taylor? I don't know. Well, then maybe he's never played in Buffalo, but he's never thrown a pick there. So we were joking on VSIN on Tuesday that Brady's thrown so many more picks in Buffalo than Nathan Peterman. So that Brady's a real stiff with all his interceptions he's thrown in Buffalo.
The over-under is 1.5. You nailed it. And
1.5, yeah, that's a good number by them. Good number by those guys.
$1.20 both sides for Bovada there.
$1.20 both sides, well, that makes things a little bit easier. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, that's a little questionable.
But, you know, I questioned, I don't think it was Bovada, but one of these offshore spots had put up the odds to be the next coach fired, and they had Sean McDermott favored over Hugh Jackson.
Yeah.
And I was very critical of that. That's ridiculous. I would have, if you just made me make a number between just those two guys, McDermott and Jackson, going into last week, I would have made Jackson like minus 5,000. I mean, why would Buffalo possibly fire Sean McDermott?
No, we've talked about it on this show. We've talked about it on the show.
He somehow got them to the playoffs last year. They're in a lot of these games this year, not every week, but they're in a lot of these games. They were in that game against New England. They won in Minnesota. They've got nothing going for them roster-wise. I mean, there's no way they'd fire that guy. That guy's doing a terrific job.
I hit the game log from last year. Peterman played the Patriots and Saints and Colts at home. I believe you're right. He did start that snow game at 13-7.
Okay.
My apologies.
I thought that he did.
So he had three home games last year, no picks in those three home
games.
Wow,
maybe the under should be favored. I think 1.5 is the right number. But maybe it should be juiced.
He had a
quarterback
rating of 126 against the Saints.
What?
But he was 7 of 10 for 79 yards, and they lost 47-10.
That's not very good.
So I like the Bears in that game. I'm rocking Chicago in the Bonanza, and I may or may not have been involved early in the week when it was 9. I may or may not have contributed to this line moving up.
Well, I was on with Brent Musburger on Tuesday, and I was in the studio at the South Point. He just was telling his listeners, his loyal listeners, if you want to bet the Bears, do it now, because we were getting word that Peterman was going to be starting for Buffalo. And Mr. Musburger was right. The line was 9 at the time, and now we have 10 here at the Superbook. It's good advice.
Very good advice. Where do you think this line closes?
It's hard to see it going much higher than this. I mean, there's always some buyback from the sharper, or the supposedly sharper groups on Buffalo or dogs of this size. Like, we had a guy that I do respect, by the way, came in and took Buffalo plus 14 on Monday afternoon against New England. Should have won that bet. And I think we'll see bets like that on Buffalo plus 10. But the public is certainly going to be on the Bears. If you make me pick a number, I'll say 10.5. But I won't be surprised if it goes the other way, down to 9 or 9.5.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I said this about Anderson. I mean, look, laying 2 touchdowns, we talked about it a week ago on the podcast, I believe. It was only the 4th time in the history of ESPN's database that a home dog on Monday night was catching at least 14. Very rare. And the other 3 times, the dogs all covered. But my point was, Derek Anderson's just not an NFL quarterback right now. So, like,
that
was the outlier.
That many times.
Yeah.
I apologize for interrupting. That's happened 4 times. There's been a 2-touchdown underdog on Monday Night Football.
It was like a long time. I actually remember one in high school in like 94 or 93. Where I thought it was 14, but it did not close 14. It was closed lower, so it was not one of the 4. But the Cowboys and the Triplets were laying 2 touchdowns at Detroit. And the Lions took them to overtime. Cowboys won on a field goal. But it was Barry Sanders and company and all that. And the Cowboys just, you know, it's hard to do that on Monday night when the team's so amped. I actually think it's a flat spot for Buffalo this week because of that. Short week, flat spot. I mean, they threw everything they had into
they
that game. And I just don't see how they, you know, get up for this game with Peterman. I mean, if the reports are that the locker room doesn't like it, I think this is a bloodbath. I really do, and I know it's a very square thing, but you know what? Like, a lot of times the Sharps get too cute with taking the ugly dogs, and I just don't see how – look, if Trubisky, you know, wets his bed, so to speak, and throws a bunch of picks and is incompetent, then yeah. But otherwise, this should be a 35-13 game.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's a tough spot for Buffalo because they really – you couldn't ask any more of the Buffalo Bills defense than what you got on Monday night. That was like – they threw the kitchen sink at Tom Brady and the Patriots. They played a great game defensively all the way until the end. And it's going to be hard for them to get up 2 weeks in a row. They're 2-6. They really have nothing at stake here.
All right, we've exhausted this game. Let's go back to the Rams. This is an intriguing game. So big, high-profile game against a marquee Super Bowl-winning quarterback last week, and they have the same. This time it's in New Orleans. Saints off an impressive win in Minnesota, which, you know, depending which way you look at that game, you could argue the Vikings were on their way to going up 10 or maybe 6 at the end of the half. Instead, they had that scoop that set up a score. But here are the Saints ripping off, what is it, 6 straight wins, hosting the Rams, and the Rammies are laying 1 on the road here.
And New Orleans really on an incredibly impressive 2-game road winning streak. You go back 2 weeks ago, they won in Baltimore, and then last week, Sunday Night Football in Minnesota. Those are two very good teams. They beat them both on the road. I know both those games could have gone either way, but the bottom line is they both went to the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, the winner of this game, especially if it's the Rams, is really going to have pole position for home field advantage in the NFC playoffs. If the Rams win this game, it's almost impossible to picture a scenario in which they don't have home field advantage, because then they'd be 2 or 2.5 games ahead of the Saints and hold the tiebreaker over the Saints. So the Rams can practically lock up home field with a win here on Sunday. And the Saints, if they win this game, they have the tiebreaker over the Rams. I still think the Rams will get it by virtue of playing in a weaker division, but the Saints could at least put some pressure on the Rams for that number one seed.
Any sharp action on this game? Here we are taping Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, a guy we respect played under 60.5, and now you see the total here is 59.5. I can tell you right now, we're probably going to be needing that guy to win his bet on Sunday. The public is going to come in very, very heavily on the over in this game. And right now, the money is, in terms of the side betting, is pretty split, and I think that'll continue until Sunday afternoon. There should be a lot of money on both sides. And I said earlier in the week on the radio, I think this might be the most heavily bet 1 o'clock, 4:30 Eastern game of the season.
What? Why do you move the total then if you expect all this money coming on the over? I know you took a sharp play on the under, but why not just keep it at 60.5 if you're expecting overplay?
We don't need to write too much. I mean, if we have guys that are willing to go under 60, under 59.5, which there are, we don't need to stay at 60.5. Is the simple answer. But don't be shocked if it goes higher on Sunday as we build up liability on the over, which certainly may happen.
Moneyline Marv sent in a question. And
it's a good name.
Good,
it's a good Twitter handle, yeah.
Yeah. If the Super Bowl was played today, what would the line be for the Rams against either the Pats or Chiefs?
The Rams against the Patriots or the Chiefs? I mean, we have a bet up that's like the NFC versus the AFC. I don't know if you've seen that, but Ed updates that every week. Right now he's got the NFC -3 and a total of 57.5. So I can cheat a little bit and tell you that. But that number is based on the Rams being in the Super Bowl. So I think it would probably be some variation of 3 in both cases. But a lot of it would depend, Marv, a lot of it would depend on if or how the AFC winner looks in the AFC championship game. The conference championship games can really change the Super Bowl line. I know a really good example of that was when Carolina blew out the Arizona Cardinals in the NFC Championship game 3 years ago, and then they ended up being like a 6.5-point favorite against Denver in the Super Bowl because they were coming in so strong. So it's hard to say for sure, but I'd say roughly the Rams would be about a 3-point favorite against either of those two teams. But it could certainly change depending on the conference championship game results 2 weeks previous to the game.
Good stuff. Another high-profile game involving Green Bay. First time in Aaron Rodgers' career that he is a underdog in back-to-back weeks of at least 4 points. So last week, around 8. What did that number close with the Rams? 7.5?
No, we got down to – we had a really sharp guy laid -7, -120 on the Rams. We closed it, I believe, +7.5, -120 on the Packers. But that number got so low to the point where we saw some of our really sharper players were laying the L.A. Rams.
It got to 7. I saw that at some square books, but close 7.5. And here are the Patriots laying 5.5 in Foxborough against Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. So back-to-back road games for the Pack.
Yeah, we talked about the Saints had two tough road games. How about these two for the Packers? At L.A. and at New England the next week, that's about as brutal as a 2-game stretch as you could ever have. It's hard for me to believe that the Packers could throw another great performance together like the one they had on Sunday in L.A., but the Patriots are a pretty beatable team. I mean, we saw that on Monday Night Football. The Patriots are just not as dominant as they've been in the last few years, in my mind.
I mean, look, they got Patterson at running back last week. Their defense, I mean, you just throw out last week because they weren't playing an NFL quarterback. So their defense has showed vulnerability. Patrick Mahomes certainly saw that. And if not for the couple mistakes early by Mahomes with Belichick throwing him some curveballs, the young guy curveballs early where he threw picks in the first half, I mean, that game obviously plays out differently. So it's just a tough ask to go back-to-back games when so much was left out there, and then the Ty Montgomery issue. So I know he's no longer on the team, but the spot is not exactly good for Green Bay.
No, it's not. It's a lot of travel, too, going from Green Bay to L.A., now going back across the country to Foxborough to play the Patriots. Yeah. It's a tough spot for the Packers. And, I was really surprised by the Ha Ha Clinton Dix trade because, my understanding is that they traded him now because they don't think that they can re-sign him in the offseason, which on the surface that makes sense, but he's one of their best defensive players. And don't the Packers have a chance to make the postseason this year? And don't you want to put your best foot forward for however many healthy prime seasons you have of Aaron Rodgers? It's hard for me to believe that a fourth-round pick is more valuable to the Packers than having Dix for the rest of this season.
Just another example of how the Packers are wasting away Aaron Rodgers' peak time.
Yeah, I mean, how many more? Aaron Rodgers is 34, and I know the quarterbacks are playing longer than ever now, but he's 34 years old. He's had seasons like last year that were wasted due to injury. How many more prime, healthy years of Aaron Rodgers do the Green Bay Packers have? I mean, this guy is one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the league. He's been carrying this franchise for over a decade. I think you really need to put your best possible team on the field for as long as you can until Aaron Rodgers can't go anymore.
But as we've talked about, Bradshaw, not to worry because you have Mike McCarthy, so it doesn't doesn't really matter how old Aaron Rodgers gets. Because that's the key.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit. As bad as that Baker Mayfield got Hugh Jackson take was, I think the Mike McCarthy over Aaron Rodgers take is actually worse. Mike McCarthy over Aaron Rodgers, that's still the champ.
Now, we discussed one on the college podcast, buying a half point in a college game on a pick 'em line, not an NFL game. So what's dumber?
No, buying a half a point in a college football game, is if the line is pick 'em, that is that's just unbelievable. I mean, a game cannot end in a tie. You know, we had a bet that we made fun of for years where this guy, I want to make sure I get it right, this guy, it was an added game. This guy bought a half a point from minus 58 and a half to minus 58. He paid the 10 cent juice for it was a dime bet, and the final score of the game was 61-3, and the guy got a push. So, and we had like a receipt of that bet. Of that bet tacked up by like our supervisor station for years because we all like thought it was so hilarious. But a college football game cannot end in a tie, so there's no point in buying it up to plus a half. That one's just dumbfounding, man.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Bob Lee.
Not of that.
Blame the odds.
Not
of that.
Sometimes there is not a chance. This is one of those rare times. No, Bob. There's no chance.
All right. So I love it. I just love it that it landed 58. I don't know why you guys would take that ticket down.
Yeah, well, I think it was before the remodel is the short answer, but that's a legendary bet that was here at the Superbook.
Okay,
it was
go ahead.
It landed. It was a push. The guy got a push. He got his dime back. He got his $1,200 back. Good for him.
Any sharp plays so far this week?
There's one group that I respect. The same one that took Buffalo plus 14 on Monday while they were here. They also took the Cleveland Browns plus 8.5. Against Kansas City. Everybody's going to be on Kansas City in that game. I wouldn't be surprised if that number went higher. We've got it at 8 right now. I understand that bet, though. I mean, you've got to think that the Browns, potentially this week, they could circle the wagons now that Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley are finally gone. And, Todd Haley deserves a lot of the blame, too. We pin it all on Hugh Jackson, but Todd Haley deserves some blame as well. But now that those guys are gone, the talent is there. We know that, man. We know that there's talent in Cleveland. I'm not saying that they have Super Bowl talent, but they don't have the talent level of a 3 or 4 win team. They're much better than that. So I could see where they might circle the wagons this week against Kansas City.
Chiefs just suffered their first loss against the point spread. They were 7-0 to start the year, too shy of the all-time record. And I just think there's other ways to make money on Cleveland here. I mean, I guess the spot, but I don't know, man. Like, do you really want Cleveland with, like, a new coach? And
yeah.
Like, it's just...
Again, the Browns are so fun, Doug. I mean, sometimes I just can't help myself. They're just too much fun.
So who do you? So
although they're not going to be
like,
as fun.
A team like Cleveland, which as of like a week or two ago, had only scored 3 points in the first quarter all season, right? So you have a team that can't score early. Why would you take +8 when Kansas City's likely going to score first and the line's going to be double digits when they do that in the live trading?
Yeah, I mean, part of the answer might be that the person you're talking to doesn't have access to live wagering, or they don't want to. Well, I mean, the simplest answer would be to this sharper group that what they bet, we wouldn't give you that on in-game wagering. We have higher limits.
So with the Bonanza, pre-game. Is my $3,000 bet on the Bills during the live wagering, is that a fair bet?
Actually, we do. We take $3,000 over the counter on in progress from anybody. So that would be right at the limit.
Okay.
So, yes, that is a. I can't let you off the hook for that one.
So I'm going to be doing the Chiefs for the Bonanza. I'm going to take a position on Kansas City in this game.
Okay.
Cleveland stinks.
I got a little wrinkle coming in the Bonanza myself.
Ooh.
I think it'll be fun
here.
Ooh.
All right.
So
I couldn't
get a winner in the Bonanza last week. I did win my pick for Brent though. That's my. I was nervous, man. When I was there last Tuesday after I gave him that Bears play, I could tell he was, like, disappointed in me, just the way he was talking to me. So when I saw him yesterday, he was, like, happy, waves me over, and I was like, oh, thank God, Mr. Musburger doesn't hate me anymore. So I was very happy that even though my Bonanza picks fell flat, what a relief it was to win that Seattle +3 play.
Yeah, why didn't you do that on the Bonanza, Seattle +3?
I didn't really like it that much. I didn't really like anything last week that much. I just kind of forced out a couple of plays. Although I actually bet that over, because I rarely ever bet on NFL. I never bet my opinion in the NFL. But I bet over in the Seattle-Detroit game. I know we talked about it already, or we texted about it, I should say. But they had a few empty possessions there, the Seahawks did, where that game could have gone over.
What other games have Sharps weighed in on already this week?
We did. We took some money, like I mentioned, on the under in the New Orleans LA game. But that's pretty much it in terms of guys that I would consider sharps. And there's just not a lot of guys that I consider sharps in the NFL. Period. It's not like college football where we have all these groups that are weighing in, that are moving the market, that are winning consistently. The NFL, we just don't see stuff like that.
How do you feel about your Redskins?
I thought they made a really good trade to get Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. I criticized Green Bay for it earlier. The flip side is I think it's a really good move for the Redskins. They pair him with DJ Swearinger, who's having a tremendous season at the other safety spot. And I saw a tweet that Pro Football Focus had those guys ranked as the second and third best safeties in the NFL so far this year. Swearinger number two, Dix number three. So that sounds pretty good. I mean, the Redskins actually have a pretty good defense. I know that you didn't see that if you watched them play Monday night against the Saints like I did, but the Redskins' defense has been playing pretty well this season, man.
First place, 5-2. I actually really like the Falcons this weekend.
Really good. The Redskins have a really good offensive line, and they've got some really good players on their defensive front seven. Alex Smith really hasn't played that well.
He's terrible.
Adrian Peterson's had a terrific year, and Jay Gruden goes for it on fourth and short. Jay Gruden's a winner. You're not going to see Jay Gruden punt on fourth and inches at the other team's 39-yard line like some of these guys do.
Couple things. Watching Alex Smith this year and watching Patrick Mahomes this year, have we reached a point where we can start pointing the finger at Andy Reid for not playing Mahomes last year at the end?
I don't know about that because it's hard to really criticize anything Andy Reid has done in developing Mahomes. I mean, maybe in the short term, I guess they probably would have beat Tennessee in the wild card game and then lost the next week. But look at the overall handling of Mahomes, trading up to get him, letting him sit for a year. It's hard to argue with the results. I mean, the kid's going to be the best quarterback in the league.
Smith is not a good quarterback.
No. No, he's not. But I know what you're saying. But I think that for the long-term health of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, and we can't assume Mahomes, after a full offseason of prep and practice, he'd be the same in the playoffs last year. Obviously, you can't do that. It's not a substitution sort of situation. But I just – hey, the Adrian Peterson got that touchdown. Now two offensive touchdowns in the second half of the Redskins this season.
That was a hell of a run, man. I mean, it was like his 26th carry of the game. The guy's 33 years old, and he rips off that run. I mean, that was really impressive. Adrian Peterson's been playing great for the Redskins.
Any trades this week that impact the point spread, like Amari Cooper, because Dallas is off a bye, so this will be the first game with the Cowboys. Any trades that have affected things?
I don't think so. I mean, Amari Cooper would be the only one that I think would be a possibility. I don't know how much Demaryius Thomas is going to play this week. Golden Tate's going to play this week. I don't know that any of those other guys are guys that impact the point spread. Boy, Dallas trading a one for Cooper looks a little bit questionable now with Philadelphia getting Tate for a three.
Yes.
Trading first-round picks is just it's a gamble. I wouldn't recommend it.
No, I would not either. Real quick, Monday night, Dallas, Tennessee, anything notable there to mention?
We did have a guy this afternoon bet Tennessee over their team total for 22,000, over 17 on the team total. So we're at 17.5 now. But that's about it. The action on that game has been pretty slow. It's not as great as a Monday night game as we're going to have next weekend when we got the big Giants 49ers game next Monday night. That's going to be must-see TV, that game.
Speaking of the must-see TV 49ers tonight with the Raiders, hey, the new age Bay of Pigs. It used to be Green Bay, Tampa Bay. Now it's the actual Bay Area Bay of Pigs.
Yeah, you know, we had a guy, we opened this game 3.5 on Sunday night, and we took some money right away on the Niners. The number went up to 4 here at the Superbook, and a guy bet the Raiders plus 4 for $35K. So
sharp,
that guy's got a pretty good-looking ticket. He's a house player. He's not dumb. He's not a dumb player. He's a house player. He took plus 4, and then, you know, with the C.J. Beathard situation, this number's come down, as you can tell. Right now we've got it 49ers minus 2.5.
Yeah, I kind of liked the Raiders in this spot without having to travel. We talk about that so much on the short week. Mm-hmm. They don't have to do that. Obviously, just a short commute to San Francisco, Santa Clara area. But I don't know if I want to back. I mean, it's a battle of 2 1-win teams. You know, it's hard to find an angle.
You're not in a real rush to back the Raiders right now.
Well, I don't want to lay points with the now third-string quarterback of the Niners.
Right.
Mullins.
That makes sense.
Yeah. We'll get to Baby Bankroll Bonanza momentarily, but first, a word from one of our sponsors. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know you can even get a postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. Right now, use BETS, B-E-T-S, for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BETS. That's stamps.com. Enter BETS.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
You're in a dark place right now, Murray.
Oh, man. It's like the scene in Two for the Money when John Anthony gets crushed the 1 week and then Walter comes over to him and he's like, oh, I must have done better this week. Last week was nothing. And then Walter says, you're right, it's nothing. It's nothing compared to what you lost this week. That's I think he's at the driving range. Remember that scene? Yeah, that movie is so good. The NFL, it's ugly, man. It's an ugly, ugly league. I got a buddy, very loyal listener to this program. And he texted me this morning. He said, I feel so bad for you He's like, he's going to give me a pick this week for the Bonanza. Now, if he really felt bad, he would have texted it directly to me. Instead, he texted it in a group text so a bunch of our other friends could laugh about it. So I don't know if he sincerely felt bad, but he did give me a play, and I'll save that play for the end. It's on the Monday night game.
Okay. So you lost 1,100. By my calculations, you're minus 2,800. By the way,
it's got to be more than that.
Okay, I got to go look. Okay, I'm glad you said that. I need to go back and check it all because I think I may have.
I don't believe. I don't believe
it. Not strong right now.
No, that can't be.
I did not email you everything last week, so I know I got to go through it all. And
I'm a man of integrity.
No, I'm not trying to fudge the numbers at all. I usually send you the picks and where we are and the tally and all that.
You do.
I did not do that last week, so I got to go listen to the pod and everything. But you had two picks.
Please.
Nickel a pop, lost 550 on both, so you lost 1,100 last week.
I like that Seattle over, though. I will say that I did like
that. Well, if they take the intentional safety and then you get the kick, you could get a backdoor touchdown for the over, and it was a strange play. The punter tried to take the intentional safety. No one was there, so Dixon, the rookie punter, ran for the first down on like 4th and 10 on his own 1 or something like that. So it was a strange play. They were trying to take the safety, improve field position on the kick instead of punting from their own back of the end zone, but...
And Seattle had a second down right down near the goal line. They came away with nothing on that drive. Russell Wilson made an incredible play to throw a touchdown pass on 4th and goal, but I think it was the tight end had stepped out of bounds. So they came – that penalty is a loss of down. So that ended the drive. But I'm not going to complain about the Seattle-Detroit game because I made that +3 winner for Musburger. So
that's true. Well,
I'm going to move – I'm moving on from that game. I'm taking that one. I'm going to next week.
So I lost my teaser. Man, those are getting pricey. It's $650, and I lost my first half under last Thursday on Miami-Houston. I think it was $300. I need to go listen to that. So that's $980. And then I won the $5,000 on the Patriots minus the 14.
Yeah.
But then lost
win's
three.
A win, man.
But then I lost $3,000 on the Twitter buyback at plus 18.
Right.
You know what's crazy is that the Bills got a 4th and 2 in field goal range, and when you're down 19. In theory, you could have kicked the field goal and I could have middled it. Now, I would not have recommended
awesome.
It because it would have been two two-point conversions and it was 4th and 2, not 4th and 11.
Yeah.
But it was on the table at least. They did go for it, did not succeed. But
that would have been an all-time like hilarious middle.
Yeah, like 10K. That would have been nice.
Yeah.
But I was happy to escape there. And those new to the program, sort of quote-unquote, on live betting, when you're getting plus 2/3, like late in the fourth quarter – they will juice it by, like, large margins because it basically means will the team score. And so when there's, like, 4 minutes to go and 5 minutes to go, they might put an over-under. Let's say it's 30 to 20. They might put 50.5 with the over plus $3 or something like that. So when you get late in the game, you have large money lines on the spreads because they typically want a half point to make things gradable. But that's why you can bail out of bets. And sometimes second-half money lines are good to get out of bets. If you're minus 14 and your team's up 14, you don't have to play back your entire side for 3.5 or whatever. You can do the money line and take a scalp essentially. So there's a lot of ways to maneuver the live wagering. We're going to do it again this week. I already said I'm going to do the Bears, but just wanted to explain my thought. I took plus 230 at plus 18.5, so got out of my bet, took a guaranteed profit, and I was able to get out.
And you were. You were in excellent position after that pick six, obviously. You're going to basically make
And because
make
I was lucky, I didn't want to press my luck, right? We saw when I did this with the Patriots-Colts game, the Colts actually cut it to 7 before the Pats scored another touchdown after an onside kick, I believe it was. Now, this obviously wasn't that much time, but I figured I got the cover, just take the money and walk away from the table and take the $2,000 and just be happy that I got out of that liability.
Yeah, and I can't say that I blame you. I mean, you can't ever feel guilty about a lucky win because you're always going to have some bad beats the other way. So just be happy, man. Good for you.
Yeah, and that's why I put $5,000. Now, if I loved it and put $5,000, then I would have sweated it out. But I only did it with the intent to play back, so I treated it like a $500 play in theory going in. So that was sort of my thought process. All right, man.
For sure.
We got to get back off this night. So, by the way, I think my calculations are 1,020. But I got to go back and do it. I'll be more buttoned up next week. I just couldn't find the picks from a couple weeks ago and whatever.
I understand.
We got the gist of things. We're not trying to cook the books here.
Nah, we'll put some W's up there this week, and then we'll announce our triumphant records on next week's show.
right. All right, I'm going to go Atlanta plus 1.5. Don't love it, but I like it enough. I'll do 300 on that one.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I can see where you're coming from there, and I've said this week I wouldn't be shocked if Atlanta went off favored in this game. We've seen that several times this season with the Redskins. I think with the Carolina-Washington game and the Dallas-Washington game, the Redskins had been a small favorite, and they ended up closing a small dog. So even though the Redskins have been winning, the market has been rejecting my local team so far this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're up, buddy.
Let me give you this one. This is the pick I gave Brent, so I got to win this one. Baltimore Ravens. I gave Brent Baltimore Ravens -3. It's even money here at the Superbook. And because I need to do something, I'm gonna play it for $1,500.
Ooh, I like it. So they're
it's
hosting.
It's week 9. It's time for me to stop sitting around and.
Yeah, they're hosting Pittsburgh.
Yeah, we've seen some guys I know that I trust like the Ravens in this game. I really like the Ravens in this game. I think it's a must-win situation basically for them. They lost two games in a row. The Bengals are quietly ahead of them as well. So if Baltimore loses this game, it's really going to be hard for them to regroup and get back into the AFC playoff picture.
Wow, that's interesting. Revenge spot, obviously Baltimore owned Pittsburgh at Heinz Field earlier this year, although there was that fumble on the goal line by the Ravens. Otherwise, it wouldn't really – the game played out in a funky way. First half went over, second half went way under. Strange game. Roethlisberger took a lot of blame, and then I think the next week he really bounced back. I'm going to go to a total here.
Okay.
Old reliable Tampa Bay has gone over seemingly every game except for one. That was against Cleveland, which just went under by a few points. So there's some high totals here. It's 55 at Carolina, but give me the over with Fitzmagic at the helm. I'll take over 55 for a nickel, $500.
What a performance by Fitzpatrick bringing the Bucks back last week against the Bengals. Tampa Bay should have gone for two when they scored that touchdown. But they didn't.
I don't remember. What was the situation?
Oh, they scored a touchdown. The extra point tied the game, I think. Or were they down by eight?
Oh, that's
eight?
Right, with the Bengals. Yeah, they were down eight. Scored the touchdown.
You're right.
So three-and-a-half-point betters. That's the beauty of betting, right? You're laying three-and-a-half.
I'm getting confused with the point spreads there. Yeah, you're right. They were down by eight. They had to go for two.
You're rooting against a team all game, right? You're rooting against Tampa Bay the entire game. And then they score. Now you're rooting for them to score the two-point conversion so you can extend the game, maybe get a six-pointer in overtime. Obviously, the Bengals won by three, but that was an all-time bad beat, man. They were, I think, 27-9 or something ridiculous in the second half.
Yeah, I was sweating out Seattle so hard, I wasn't really paying any attention to the other 10 a.m. games. Except for, I did watch Kansas City-Denver. We desperately needed Denver to cover that point spread, and they did. They were down by 10, and they kicked a field goal to lose by 7.
So your play on that game is what?
It's Baltimore -3. It's even money, and I did it for $1,500.
Right, so you have a second game now.
Oh, you want my next play?
Yeah, I apologize. Yep.
My other play is, this is going to be really fun. Cleveland +8. I'll do that one for $500. I'm going to go against the play that I think you're about to give me.
A teaser? No, I'm going to do a teaser first. I'm going to do Kansas City -2. And the Bears -4 for a grand.
All right, that's a six-pointer.
Yep.
That should be fun. I mean, you're going against the Browns and you're going against Jay Peterman.
Now, I think the Browns are good. Like, this is more of a bet on the Chiefs, and they're just loaded and blah blah blah.
Okay, I got one other play that's my own, and then I got my buddy's play. I'm going to do that one last. I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos -1. They're at home against the Houston Texans. Texans are on a 5-game winning streak, but I think it's kind of a phony winning streak.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Denver at home -1 for 550 to win 500.
I heard a really good take. Remember last week on the pod, we questioned the health of Deshaun Watson with bruised ribs, lung kind of situation. Remember he took a bus to get down to Miami for that game and how healthy he is to play a football game. Not a bus to Miami, Jacksonville. A bus to Jacksonville. They hosted Miami a week ago. Well, how's his lung going to do in the thin air of Denver?
That's a great question, and that was definitely part of the reason why, or is part of the reason why I like Denver this week. You got to think that's going to be a problem for him. And Houston, I know they've won 5 games in a row, but they've done it against a very weak group of opponents, and those first 2 wins were both in overtime. and were both aided by coaching decisions that were questioned by many in the media. I myself questioned Jason Garrett quite a bit for his punt in overtime in that Sunday night game.
Yep, yep. All right, so we're going to need director approval here.
Okay.
We have an agreement that if we go below a certain amount, we have buybacks, right? We have buybacks for Kai's baby newborn?
Yeah, I think, well, if we run out of the bankroll, right, then we have to buy back, and Kai's kid's going to be running around in, like, the new Jordans by the end of the season.
So I'm going heavy here, and because I don't have an exact tally of my bankroll, I'm going to use some artistic liberties here. That if I need,
all you got to do, Doug, is just Venmo Kai now, and then it's all above board.
All right, so I'm doing five dimes on the aforementioned Chiefs minus eight that you mentioned. So we're going head to head for the first time in a game this year.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I was going to watch the Browns game anyway because I love the Browns. So I'll definitely be right in front of that Kansas City Cleveland game on Sunday morning.
Now, will I need manager or director approval if I play back on a live bet of Cleveland plus, let's say, 11.5 or 12.5? Because you're going to need that side, so you may want to take a bigger limit there.
Oh, we're going to need that side. Well, yeah, I mean, our limits on in-game are 3K, but I think we can work with you, sir. You have a player's card here?
Yeah.
I think we can work with you.
All right. So that's my five dime. Are you out of place?
No, I got to give my buddies play.
Yeah, okay, so I wasn't sure.
It's my final play of the week. Again, he had to do this in the group text. He couldn't just, God forbid, he just sent it to me directly, but he wanted me to do Marcus Mariota under 228.5 passing yards for a dime. And I said to him, you can't do any worse than me, so I'm going to put it out on the bonanza.
There you go. All right. Collaborative effort from the Murray clan.
Oh, yeah. Got to do something, man.
Yeah, we got Mike Clay coming up on the pod with some prop bets too. So I like the synergy we have going on there. And Clay is on the same prop. That's one of his five props for this weekend. So
really
great
minds. Wow.
Yeah. All right, I got another play. Go ahead.
Clay is in my group text. But go on. You never know. You'd be welcome to join the group text.
Okay. Good. All right, I'm going to do another five dime. I mentioned it earlier. I'm going to take the Bears minus 10 as an initial position. We're going for a middle again, man. We're going to get this thing.
Wow.
And then I'm just going to bury you. And then I'm going to run out the clock. I'm going to start taking knees and make you chuck and duck. Once I got
to
hit one of these miles.
Todd Gurley, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to do a Todd Gurley once I hit one of these middles. And then make you make a move. But you're making a move, $1,500 wager. We'll see.
I'm doing a $1,500 on the Ravens with no playbacks there. I mean, I'm already committed to it. I mean, Mr. Musburger already put in his card because he's in the Bay Area to call the Raiders 49ers game. There's no turning back on the Ravens.
I just love that an NFL broadcaster is in the Super Contest.
Oh yeah, man,
that's great. Yeah. Times era changing. We talked about it with Gurley earlier. That's another example. And then we have some stories on ESPN.com as well right now with just a lot of official sponsorship. We talked about it with the NHL getting into it, the NBA and the MGM. So a lot of partnerships going on. So the shift is certainly occurring.
Yeah, and actually the Raiders announced a partnership this morning with Caesars Palace or Caesars Company. They're going to have some sponsorships at the new stadium, which the new stadium out here opens in 2020.
All right, bud. Good stuff as always. Let's see what happens with the bonanza. Pivotal moment moving forward.
Potentially a life-changing weekend is what you're saying.
And we'll see if Mike Clay on your group text needs needs to be censored.
Yeah. Yeah, I could use the help, Mike. I could use your help, please.
All right, bud. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you later, man.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Talk nerdy to me.
Fantasy analyst Mike Clay joins us now on the podcast. Mike, how are you, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
You know, I doubted you. I doubted you that Derek Anderson could get there with the completions, but he got there. Props to you.
Hey, win some, lose some, right?
All right, let's get to this, man. You got five plays, none for Thursday night football, so no time crunch here. Nothing. A lot of our listeners say, hey, can we get those posted earlier, blah, blah, blah. We're okay. First up is Sunday night with that high-profile game
with the Packers at the Patriots.
Yeah, and the reason there's no Thursday props is because Westgate didn't drop them. I think they were a little afraid of the quarterback situation there in San Fran, so nothing available there. But nonetheless, we have a few options here from the other primetime games. And, Doug, we'll start out with Tom Brady here. I have him under 26.5 completions in this one. That's what, that one's at minus 110. I have him at 23, so it's not a major gap, but it's certainly significant as player projections go. He's been under 26.5 in 6 of 8 games this season. Last year, he went over the mark in only 5 of 17 regular season games. And listen, I know the Patriots run a lot of plays, but they're calling a balanced offense, actually, not a pass-heavy offense, or balanced offense for the first time since 2013. Also, you look at the Packers' defense, quarterbacks are completing only 62% of passes against them. That is 6th lowest in the NFL, not to mention they've had some injuries in that secondary. They're getting healthy now, maybe at the best they've been all season. So a lot of reasons to think Brady comes up a little bit short of this 26.5 number.
All right, they lose AHA Clinton Dix, but other trends suggest that goes under 26.5. Gronk score a touchdown prop, favored to the no, minus 140.
Yeah, this one I kind of listed it as a bonus, if you will. You know, you have to kind of decide which way you want to lean. Are you buying into the fact that Gronk has not been used much near the goal line this season, or that, you know, it's kind of a fluke for half the season and Gronk will return? Because, you know, if you believe that old Gronk will return, it's plus 120 to take the yes here, and that's quite appealing. He only has 1 touchdown in 7 games this season, but he had 11 in 17 games last year, including the playoffs. But again, you look at his usage this season. We have a stat that I created a few years ago, OTD, we post every week at ESPN Plus, and that shows you your expected touchdown total based on your usage. Are you used near the goal line, away from the goal line? Are you getting enough volume? And his is 1.9. That's low for him, but says he should be right around 2 touchdowns. He only has the one, and including 2 end zone targets. You would expect a lot larger number for Gronkowski. So, you know, I tend to lean toward the yes on this one just because it is plus 120 and it is Rob Gronkowski, one of the premier touchdown scorers of the past decade in the league. But there's obviously some risk here because he has not been getting the ball near the goal line this season.
No, he's not. And some question whether he's healthy or not. Obviously, he missed the game against the Bears a couple weeks ago. So some uncertainty surrounding Gronk. But you're getting Gronk, but you're getting plus money there. Let's go to Monday night. Titans at the Cowboys, and you have 3 prop bets here. We already had John Murray of the Westgate in the Baby Bankroll Bonanza take Mariota under. We speculated whether you're on his group text to friends because one of his buddies, you wouldn't name one, suggested the under. I'm assuming that's not you, so why do you like the under 228.5?
That is not me, but I do like the under here. It's the line is 228.5 passing yards. I have him at 199, so I have him not quite cracking the 200-yard mark. He's been well below 228 in 4 of 6 games this season. He had the 237 against the Chargers, so just barely beat it in that one. And then he put up 344 against the Eagles, but if you recall, that game went to overtime, so he boosted that quite a bit, including the game-winning touchdown to Corey Davis. He was under 130 against the Ravens, the Bills, and the Jags, and that's notable because those are 3 pretty good defenses, and that is the case for Dallas as well. You know, Mariota's been under this mark 10, or he was under that mark 10 of 17 games last season as well. So it's not like he's usually been up in the mid-250s. He's usually well below that. But again, that Cowboys defense, they're allowing 10.8 yards per catch this season. That's 6th lowest in the league. They're allowing 234 passing yards a game, and they're playing offenses that are much more reliant on the passing game than the Titans are. And speaking of the Titans offense, I mean, 29th in plays per game this season. Dallas is 25th in plays per game allowed. Tennessee's a run-heavy offense, and opposing offenses have been very run-heavy against Dallas. So I think there's, again, a lot of variables in play here that suggest they'll probably fall short of.
I would never bet over on that bet, so I like the under there, too. I couldn't bet Mariota over passing yards unless it's like 100 yards. You're going under passing touchdowns as well, 1.5.
Yeah, same thing. I'm expecting a low-scoring affair. The books are as well, but I think this one could be even lower than expected. 2 of the best defenses in the league. The line here is 1.5 passing touchdowns for Mariota. At minus 180, the over is plus 150. So they're kind of, it's kind of interesting to take a shot on that if you think maybe Tennessee will be playing from behind. If you like the over, for the score, you might actually want to go with that, the plus 150. But nonetheless, I only have him at one touchdown. You know, you look at the offense here that he's facing, seven touchdowns allowed in eight games. The Titans – oh, actually, let me rephrase that. That you look at the Bills offense, right? We know how bad the Bills offense is this season. They have seven touchdowns in eight games this season. Well, the Titans have eight touchdowns in seven games. I mean, they're second worst. The Bills are terrible, and the Titans aren't too far ahead of them. Tennessee only five passing touchdowns in seven games. And again, just a little bit more on that, you know, on the Cowboys defense here, they're allowing 1.7 touchdowns per game. That is tied with, coincidentally, the Titans for best in the NFL. They've been very good in that department, and they've allowed only one touchdown or more than one touchdown in a game twice this season. That was Seattle and Detroit, 5-7 opponents below two touchdowns. So again, a lot of numbers there, but the fact is, you know, the Cowboys have played very well defensively, and especially against the pass. I think Mariota's going to really have trouble getting past one touchdown in this game.
So just to clarify for those who are unfamiliar with it, it's passing touchdowns. Mariota running a touchdown does not qualify, so it's under 1.5 passing touchdowns, minus $1.80. Yeah. Final prop, Dallas's team total of 23.5 points under.
Yeah, that one's at minus 110. I like this as well. Again, not a major gap, but I have them at 21 points in this game. I think it'll be something like 21-17, a low-scoring game Dallas comes away with. Cowboys, again, 27th in touchdowns per game this season on the offensive side of the ball at 1.9 per game. They've scored two or fewer offensive touchdowns in six of seven games. And then again, on the other side, I just mentioned that the Titans have been terrific. They're right there with Dallas on the defensive side of the ball. Say what you want about their offense. Their defense has played well, 1.7 touchdowns per game, again, tied with the Cowboys for best in the league. They've allowed more than two touchdowns in a game, only once. It was that game where they lost 21-0 to Baltimore. So, again, expecting a lot of defense on this during this Monday night football game. I think Dallas and maybe even Tennessee will come up a little short of their expectation here.
All right, my man. Good stuff as always. No Thursday nighter. Westgate didn't put him up, as you alluded to, so we'll have to get by with just two games of prop bets. But nice five plays, including a bonus play there on Gronk. Appreciate the time as always, Mike.
Anytime, Doug. Take care.
Talk nerdy to me.
All right, that does it for this podcast. As I mentioned on the college football podcast, we taped Thursday a little late, so appreciate everyone's patience on this one. We'll get it posted quickly and hopefully keep a nice season going. It should be interesting with the baby bankroll bonanza with two big positions for yours truly, and obviously Murray stepping up his action, having to make a move here. Kai, confessions of a non-gambler. Anything throw you off there?
Yeah, I wanted to get a little explanation on the term push.
Push. So we talk about half points, right? If a team is favored by 3.5, 4.5, 5.5, obviously there's going to be a winner and a loser guaranteed on that because you can't have a half point in football. But if the line is just 6 and the team wins by 6, it's like a tie. Everyone gets their money back. Like it's like kissing your sister.
Oh, so right? It's just canceled out.
Canceled out. You get your money back. It's a push. Like in blackjack, if you have 18, dealer has 18, it's a push. It's a tie. Anything else? Any other confessions?
No, man, that was it. And I mean, just like they've been rolling, like they're pretty – well, that one is not as self-explanatory, but it makes a lot of sense when you break it down. But shout to Money Marv, Marv Moneyline, who's sending in the question. So I'll try to get
Moneyline
Marv,
yeah. No, and please, anyone listening who has questions for the podcast, tweet us directly at Doug ESPN. I'll ask Murray or whoever needs is the best source for that answer. The reason Murray said that is because the Super Bowl, more than any other football game, is dictated by the public before more than any other NFL game. Because usually the professionals, they determine the market. You know, they'll be liable on one side, but the number will stay put or something like that. But the Super Bowl is such a public betting game that the public dictates the line move because you have people coming out of the woodworks, these actors or celebrities, just going heavy on the game, and obviously the masses. So the public determines, and that's why he said it so much depends on how they looked in the conference championship game because bettors are reactionary. They remember what they last saw. We've talked about that a lot in the pod. So if a team looks very good or very bad, even in a win in the AFC championship game or NFC championship game, that'll influence what the line is because that's going to influence what the bettors are. And there's just not enough sharp money for a Super Bowl to offset all the public money. Now, regular season game, yeah, like the sharp money will offset the public backing. But for a big game like that, which will set records, because we've seen records, I believe, four out of the last five Super Bowls in terms of handle, it's so important what the public perceives is the value than the professionals perceive. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks to everyone for downloading. Don't forget, go. Kai, you waiting? Drum roll, please.
I'm waiting. Let's get it.
Subscribe. Download, rate, and review.
There we go. There we go.
I got to remember fours and groups of four.
Hey, man, it's repetition. That's all.
All right. Calendars turn to November. Football season is on the back nine here. Kind of sad in that regard. But still plenty to gamble on, and we'll do that this weekend. Thanks again to everyone listening.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.